Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, chapter 10. Prahlad, the best among exalted devotees. Text 41 and 42. Esha Brahmanya Devasya Krishnasya cha Mahatmana Avatara Kata Punya Vidoya Tradi Daityayo. Text 41. Everything you asked me about Shishupal and others, everything you asked about how Shishupal and others attained salvation, although they were inimical, has now been explained to you by me. Text 42. In this narration about Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, various expansions or incarnations of the Lord have been described, and the killing of the two demons, Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, has also been described. Purport. Avatars, or incarnations, are expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, Govinda. Advaitam Achutam Anadam Anantarupam Ajam Padana Purusham Navayovinam Cha Vedeshu Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhakta Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, who is the original person, non-dual, infallible, and without beginning. Although he expands into unlimited forms, he is still the original. And although he is the oldest person, he always appears as a fresh youth. Such eternal, blissful, and all-knowing forms of the Lord cannot be understood by the academic wisdom of the Vedas, but they are always manifest to pure, unalloyed devotees. Brahma Samhita 533. The Brahma Samhita describes the avatars. Indeed, all the avatars are described in the authentic scriptures. No one can become an avatar or incarnation, although this has become fashionable in the age of Kali. The avatars are described in the authentic scriptures, shastras, and therefore, before one risks accepting a pretender as an avatar, one should refer to the shastras. The shastras say everywhere that Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and that he has innumerable avatars or incarnations. Elsewhere in the Brahma Samhita, it is said, Ramadi Murtishu Kala Niyamena Tishtan, Rama, Nisringha, Varaha, and many others are consecutive expansions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After Krishna comes Balaram, and after Balaram is Sankarshan, then Aniruddha, Pradumna, Narayan, and then the Purusha avatars, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and Shirodakshaya Vishnu. All of them are avatars. One must hear about the avatars. Narrations about such avatars are called avatar katha, the narrations of Krishna's expansions. Hearing and chanting these narrations is completely pious. Shinvatam sakata Krishna punya shravana kirtana. One who hears and chants can become punya, purified of material contamination. Whenever there are references to the avatars, religious principles are established and demons who are against Krishna are killed. The Krishna conscious movement is spreading all over the world with two aims: to establish Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and to kill all the pretenders who falsely present themselves as avatars. The preachers of the Krishna conscious movement must carry this conviction very carefully within their hearts and kill the demons who in many tactful ways vilify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. If we take shelter of Nrisimha Dev and Prahlad Maharaj, it will be easier to kill the demons who are against Krishna and to thus reestablish Krishna's supremacy. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the Supreme Lord, the original Lord. Prahlad Maharaj is our guru, and Krishna is our worshipful God. As advised by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Bij. If we can be successful in getting the mercy of Prahlad Maharaj, and also that of Nrisimha Dev, then our Krishna consciousness movement will be extremely successful. The demon Hiranyakashipu had so many ways to try to become God himself. But although Prahlad Maharaj was chastised and threatened in many ways, he rigidly refused to accept his powerful demoniac father as God. Following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, we should reject all the rascals who pretend to be God. We must accept Krishna and his incarnations and no one else. Om Bhagana Timadandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. We are getting the wrap up now to the Leela of Prahlad Maharaj and Lord Nrisimhadev. And we should understand that there have been some issues that Prichit Maharaj wanted resolved. These issues began the seventh canto. The issues are about whether the Supreme Personality of Godhead is impartial. Samap Priya Sahid Brahman Bhutanam Bhagavan Swayam. This is the first question posed at the beginning. Verse number one of the seventh canto. Let's look at the facts. We understand Samapriya Sahid Brahman. Prichit's talking to the Brahmana, Shukadev Goswami, described as the eye of the world. We all know that the Supreme Personality, Godhead, is equal, Samapriya. He's the well-wisher of everyone. And Sahid, he's everyone's best friend. Of all living entities. Then tell me, how can it be that the Supreme Personality, Godhead, is partial? We just heard in the sixth canto that the Supreme Personality of Godhead conspired to do away with the enemies of Indra. He evidently took the side of the demigods in opposition to the demons. So what is this? Another angle of this question is, why should the Supreme Personality of Godhead get involved in this world? What is all this talk, in other words, about a proactive Bhagavan? What is he doing meddling in our affairs according to his own vision? What about our vision? This is the same problem people have with Bhagavad Gita. Why is this partiality shown by Krishna by his getting involved in a battle and backing the Pandavas? And of course, a further extension of this perplexity is, isn't God the supreme pacifist? Shouldn't God be nonviolent? So what is he doing? Number one, in the sixth canto, he's siding with the demigods against the demons. And then you see in the battle of Kurukshetra, he's manipulating, guiding Arjuna. Arjuna doesn't want to fight, and Krishna urges him onward. So what kind of Bhagavan is this? People actually feel uncomfortable with knowing that there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead who calls the shots. They want a kind of God who comes around when it's time to give material benefits according to our perception and who disappears for our sense gratification. When it's time for our sense gratification, he's gone. When we need help, he's here. So, it's not always that people can appreciate these points. And sometimes they react very strongly. Srila Prabhupada's first program, actually the first devotee program that done at Stanford University here in California. When Srila Prabhupada first established, he and the devotees established the center in Haight-Ashbury. So they did a program at Stanford. And the students began by chanting wildly. They were just chanting out of their minds, literally. Chanting at the top of their lungs and dancing. That's how the program started. So then, Prabhupada gave his lecture and asked for questions. So I'll raise your hand. What if the government sends you to war? What about that? And so, devotees, Hayagriva Prabhu were there. They braced themselves because Prabhupada's not going to back down. they braced themselves for the blast because they knew this could explode. Because it was during the Vietnam War when all the young people, especially in Berkeley, were very vehemently opposed. So, the question, what if the government orders you to fight in a war? So Prabhupada answered, there's no harm if you go. The students were in shock. And then he explained that if the government orders you to go, it's not the same as if you murder someone. You are a soldier killing on the order of the government. So Prabhupada was explaining the intricacies of karma. And then he pointed out that although there's no harm because there's no harm to you because you're simply carrying out orders of your government, when we look at the whole situation, we see that guess who chooses the government? Is you. They didn't like that answer. People were yelling out, fascist, Nazi. They were yelling out to Prabhupada. Practically the whole room left. Then for the final kirtan, there was practically no one there chanting. So people have a little difficult time understanding how the Supreme Personality of God is equipoised and equal. Basically, they're saying we don't want the Supreme Personality of God to show up on his terms. If he's going to at all have something to do with the world, it should be on our terms. So therefore, Pritchard Maharaj wants to clear this up. Sum up Priya Suhid Brahman. We all know that the Supreme Lord is equal to everyone. He's everyone's well-wisher. And he's everyone's best friend. But there seems to be some complexities here. So he's turning to Shukadeva Goswami, the eye of the world. Please, can you sort this out? And Pritchard Maharaj expresses that I have doubts. This question is troubling my mind. My mind is like the flame of a lamp disturbed by the blowing wind. Of course, Pritchard Maharaj is asking the question on behalf of the conditioned souls. He wants Shukadeva Goswami to clarify this. So Shukadeva Goswami explains that understanding Krishna's dealings in this world, avatar kata. Avatar, as you know, means that which comes down into the material world. Understanding Krishna's activities, his Naralila, and all his other expansions and incarnations, understanding what they do, means you have to understand the body of the Supreme Personality of God. So you know that Krishna is not different from his body. And the same is true for all his avatars. That his body is all spiritual means there cannot be any partiality or favoritism as we know it in the material world. So we have to follow through. Advaitam, Achutam, Anadam, Anantarupam. If indeed the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, is non-dual, infallible, and without beginning, if he has an all-spiritual form, then how can he have partiality, aversion, all those kind of things, which are characteristics of having a material body? We're so locked in the bodily conception of life that even when we think of God, we see the characteristics of a material body. So the Bhagavatam and the whole seventh canto is clearing that out. Aversion, attachment, friends, enemies, partiality, this is all These are all the characteristics of a material body. But Krishna has no material body. He has no need to be averse to anyone. And because he's self-sufficient, he has no need for allies or friends in the material sense. So once you understand that, then only can you proceed to the next issue. In the course of Shukadeva Goswami answering Pritchett's question about the equality or the equal dealings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shukadeva describes a conversation between Narada and Yudhisthira. And so Yudhisthira Maharaj takes this whole topic of partiality, impartiality of Bhagavan a step further. He says, in other words, not only do we have this intricacy of the Lord seemingly siding with the demons, siding with the demigods against the demons, but what about this? Shishupal, a most ferocious demon, attains salvation. How do we understand that? In other words, the dealings of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are very mystifying. They're totally beyond us. Is he partial? Is he impartial? And then hideous demons attain salvation. What is going on here? That's the seventh canto. What's going on here? What is the nature of Bhagavan? What's his program? What's his agenda? Why does he do what he does? So the whole seventh canto is about that. And of course, the climax of the seventh canto is Nrisimhadeva appearing to protect Prahlad and kill Hiranyakashipu. So you see remnants in text 41 of this issue that Yudhisthira Maharaj raised in Narada Muni. Dhammaghosa sutadinam hare satyam api drisham. Okay, Shishupal and also others, they attained salvation, although they were inimical. And specifically, what kind of salvation did they attain? Satyam, equal bodily features with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, now, it is said that it's been explained. What Yudhisthira asked about has now been explained. Narada Muni is saying, everything you asked me about, it's all been explained. How and why these demons got equal bodily features. And in today's verse that we're focusing upon, we are further presented with the necessity to hear about Krishna. Because it's only by hearing about Krishna and serving him that all these issues become clear. This is very important. You can't understand this subject matter with academic mentality. It's not possible. So this barrier confounds materialists, and sometimes they get enraged. What do you mean? I have to be part of your cult to understand what I'm reading. Get real. I've got intelligence. You got intelligence. I've studied Sanskrit. What's the big deal? You've got your opinion. I've got my opinion. Why do you say that I need to hear through parampara and perform devotional service, and then I can understand? Well, the proof is that without doing that, no one understands Krishna. They can't understand him. What's the first thing you read when you open the Krishna book, Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead? In his preface or introduction, Srila Prabhupada says that anyone who actually knows what is God will accept Krishna. So that means if you are not educated, if you don't understand what is God, you're going to have a problem with Krishna. So therefore, in Prabhupada's purports, he's educating persons. This is God. And then it makes it so easy for you to accept Krishna. Anyone who actually knows what is God will accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of God. What is the use of someone just rejecting out of hand, Krishna. Oh, no, not Krishna. It can't be Krishna. Well, what knowledge do you have that you can reject Krishna? If you educate yourself and understand the science of God, if you actually understand it, you'll accept Krishna. And what's the second reason that Srila Prabhupada presents in that beginning of the Krishna book? He says, we accept Krishna because all the greatest personalities in the universe accept Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead. In other words, we're not just doing our own thing. You know, I like the blue boy. Who do you like? We are following the most powerful personalities, the most authorized, the most educated, erudite personalities. That makes a huge difference. So therefore, in today's verse, the necessity of avatar katha is stressed. Understanding Krishna, understanding Krishna's relations with his devotees, hearing through disciplic succession, engaging your senses in devotional service, then everything becomes clear. So our process is repeated hearing. It's not like you go to some mundane institution. You learn something, you get your degree, that's it. Our process is constant hearing, repeated hearing. In other words, we have to get out of our system this notion that we're going to master the information in Bhagavatam. You can't materially master it. You simply hear it, and it becomes more and more clear the more you repeatedly hear. You can't lord it over Bhagavatam. You enter into Bhagavatam by rendering submissive devotional service. Vasudeva Kataruchi Syan Mahat Sevaya Vipra. By rendering service to the Mahat, to the great soul, you are blessed with Vasudev Kataruchi. The ruchi, the taste for hearing, talks about Vasudev. It comes to you because of serving Krishna's great devotees. So there's no question of, now I've got it all understood. Now I've got the subject mastered. No. That's why Lord Chaitanya instructs, before you are liberated, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, and after you are liberated, go on hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. So we're stuck. What we are doing now, we'll be eternally doing. So let's look at, again, this issue of Krishna's rewarding demons who are killed by him with salvation. It's a tricky point, as we explained yesterday, because naturally, with our material minds, we'll say, wait a minute, demons should be crushed, and we, the devotees, should be distinctly rewarded. Otherwise, what's the point in our being devotees? That's actually what we're saying underneath the law. If the demons get the same thing, what am I doing this for? We calculate with our materialistic mentality. I'm serving Krishna to get that special reward. If the demons also get it, then hey, I should get out there and enjoy my senses. That's actually what we're saying. I'm taking all this, quote, trouble to serve Krishna just to get the same reward the demons get. How can he do that? So in this way, Krishna gets it from all sides. He gets criticized for being partial to Indra and the demigods, and he gets criticized for giving the same reward to the demons. So that's why, one of the reasons why you have this whole discussion in the seventh canto, where it's explained that any way you come in contact with Krishna, you'll always come out better, even if he kills you. That's how great Krishna is. You touch fire, so in some way you're going to be burned, you'll be transformed, no matter what your motive is. Still, the question then is, well, shouldn't there be something special for the devotees? And even the greatest souls in Bhagavatam are kind of asking that question. I mean, okay, Krishna, okay. Shouldn't there at least be something distinctive for those who surrender to you in love? And this is a question that Brahma posed to Krishna in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. Brahma's prayers. So he said to Krishna, look, My mind is boggled. My mind is bewildered, trying to think, how could there be any other reward than you? You are the embodiment of all benedictions. There's no other reward than you. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that Brahma is saying, it's not only me, but Shiva is wondering about this. The Kumaras are wondering about this. There's no other reward than you. Now, why are they saying that? Lord Brahma goes on to explain. You gave yourself to Putana and her family members. Even though she disguised herself as a devotee and came to kill you, you gave yourself to her. So you've given yourself. And remember, there's no other reward than you. Therefore, what is left for the Brijbasis? There's no other reward in existence than you. But you gave yourself to Putana and her family members. Who were her family members? Bakasura, who was the other one? She had two brothers, didn't she? Agassara, yes, yes. So you gave yourself to them, and there's no other reward than you. So what about the Brijbasis who have sacrificed everything for you? Families, homes, wealth, their very life and soul they've given to you. What's left for them? There's nothing else to have than you. There's no greater reward. So how are you going to treat them special, in other words? What do you have in reserve that you can give to them? You don't have anything because there's no other reward than you. So how are we going to solve this problem? Shiva's wondering. The Kumaras are wondering. What's going on here? So Brahma confesses, I'm totally bewildered. So then the Acharyas explained that Brahma and Krishna had a kind of a dialogue. And Krishna explained to him, I already knew in advance about the extraordinary devotion of the residents of Vrindavan. Therefore, I in advance gave myself to them as their son, and they're satisfied with this. You know, in the Brahma Vimohana Lila, all the elder gopis of Vrindavan had a chance to have Krishna as their son. Now, all the cows had a chance to have Krishna as their child, their calf. So Krishna is saying, look, I already knew about their extraordinary devotion. So in advance, I arranged to give myself as their son. And they're satisfied. In other words, Brahma, just leave it at that. So what was Brahma's response? Well, I know everything you say is proper, but... Vaishnava talk, you first, you know, offer proper prayers and offer proper praises. It's a good way of doing things in Vaishnava interactions. I know everything you say is proper. It's just that So Brahma presented himself in that way. I know everything you say is proper, but remember, Putana got the benediction of being a nurse in Goloka Vrindavan, remember? In other words, she gets to treat you as her son. So how can you say that the Brijbasis who loved you, they got something special or distinctive when Putana, disguising herself as a devotee, she got the same thing. So here we are back to square one again. You say, in reciprocation to the Brijbasis' extraordinary devotion, you gave yourself to them as your son, as their son. But that's the same thing you gave to Putana. So how is it special? How did Brahma resolve this? In the end, Brahma just concluded, here's the situation. You are eternally indebted to the Brijbasis. That's how the situation resolved. In other words, Krishna's being indebted to his devotees is a characteristic of praying. Now, we might say, to be indebted to someone, that's a very weak position. You don't want to get in that position of being indebted. But in Goloka Vrindavan, Krishna's being indebted to his devotees. That's a supreme characteristic of love of Godhead. So that's how the issue was resolved, because Krishna gave himself to the Brijabasis as their son, but then he also gave himself to Putna. She took position as mother in Vrindavan, equal to a mother in Vrindavan. She became a nurse, as Uddhava exclaims in the third canto of Bhagavatam. Ahoyam bhakti stala kalakuta. Uddhava is saying, how glorious is this? How amazing is this? So it seems everything is equal. Krishna gives the demons the same thing that he gave the devotees in the case of this special demon, Putana. But then again, you have to go deeper into Prem and understand that Krishna's becoming indebted to his devotees, that is especially exquisite. I've got nothing more to give the Brijabasis, just like he told the gopis. You'll just have to be satisfied with your service. And we might say, just be satisfied by devotional service. Krishna, give some material benedictions. Give some powers. I mean, just be satisfied with your service. Even in our ordinary daily dealings, if you go to the temple president and you have some problem, he says, well, a major part of your solution is that you should be satisfied with your service. Wait a minute. This is retro stuff. Dinosaur. But that is the way Vrindavan works. Krishna doesn't mind becoming under the control of his dearest devotees. Okay, I'll be indebted to them. He told the gopis that also. I can't pay my debt to you. This is love. In other words, I'm your puppet. I'm under your control. To understand this, we have to have out of our mind any hope for material benedictions, any hope for receiving material opulence, fulfillment of material desires in exchange for devotional service. And Prahlad Maharaj, by his activities in relation to Hiranyakashipu and Lord Nrisingadev, by our hearing about Prahlad's activities, we become cleansed of the desire to offer devotional service in exchange for material fulfillment. By hearing about Prahlad, those unwanted and illegal tendencies in us become cleansed, and then we can better appreciate how monumental it is, how inconceivable it is that Krishna becomes the property of his devotees. So that's what Brahma is getting at. You can't give anything more than yourself, but you've given yourself to Putana. What's left for the Brijabasis? Okay, you're indebted to them. That is the ecstasy of Krishna praying. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Hare Krishna.